We are back from our bye. We are refreshed, we are rejuvenated, and we are ready to go and bring you the best Bears analysis, the best Bears podcast in the world here at ChicagoFootball.com. I am Kevin Fishbane, joined by my co-host, Arthur Arkish. We got executive producer Dan Mott, associate producer John Sally, and an extra associate producer. We like to call him Nick the Intern. Arthur, we got a lot of stuff to get to today. We'll talk about Bears-Vikings, of course. We'll make our picks for that game. We'll talk about Jeremiah Ratliff. But first, let's talk about a relaxing bye week where we can just kind of enjoy football and sit on the couch. It's at least what I did. Did you enjoy your bye weekend?
It was glorious indeed. Yeah, it was a long day of football, of course, starting bright and early over in London. Yeah, it was an entertaining game, if nothing else. And yeah, I spent the day with my son and kicked back, watched a lot of football, and kind of thought about what we'd have in store for the final 10 weeks of the Bears as well. What about you, Kev? What'd you do?
Well, first of all, I forgot to introduce Spencer Bowie, who is your child, who is always here with us on the podcast. I also really kind of laid a dent in the couch, a quick couch story for you. On Saturday, I parked in at around 11 o'clock to watch Northwestern Nebraska, watch my Wildcats. And my roommate was leaving the apartment right around kickoff. And she got back at 2:30 on the dot, right when the Wildcats were taking a knee in their victory formation. And I was in the exact same spot she left me. And we're kind of new roommates. And suffice to say, Arthur, she was slightly appalled that I hadn't moved in 3.5 hours.
Well, I'm impressed. I think a guy, you know, really the hardest working man on the Bears beat deserves a break, too. I'm sure she knows what you've been going through the first 6 weeks. So regardless of what she thought, I'm proud of you for taking a load off. It's very unlike you, but hopefully it did you some good.
Well, I appreciate you not throwing me under the bus because, as you know, once that game ended, then I did a little work and actually emailed you some of the work. But that's okay. The listeners don't need to know that, nor do they care. How was your experience watching Bills Jaguars from London on Yahoo?
It was pretty good. You know, I didn't really have any issues with the stream. I was a little disappointed I wasn't able to get my Chromecast working just because, you know, it's always preferable to have it up on the big screen rather than watching on my laptop. But in terms of the stream, I thought it was pretty solid. And you know, I think this Jaguars team is actually kind of interesting. They did everything they could to blow that game. Obviously, we were able to hold on. But yeah, I thought it went well, and I'm quite sure there will be more to come just given the accounts we're hearing with what a success it was. But I'm curious to hear if you have a different take or if it was kind of similarly enjoyable for you.
Oh, no, I loved it. Jaguars, Bills, roll out of bed and just flip it on. I thought it was great. And actually, I didn't tweet this because I didn't want to sound like a brat seeing everyone complain about their experiences. But my TV actually had an app within the TV designated just to watch the game, which I found out about like probably 9 hours before kickoff, just kind of fiddling with the TV. And right there, it said Yahoo free game, Jaguars, Bills. And I went to that and it was like, you know, I was watching the game live. Ironically enough, though, the only time it went out on me was when the Bills had fourth down at the end of regulation and suddenly it froze. And of course, I just went to Twitter and everybody already tweeted what happened, that they went incomplete. So it kind of ruined the surprise. But I loved it. But then again, I guess that was kind of 1% of me to enjoy my TV experience. But I'm all for the 8:30 kick. If they're going to look, if they're going to make these teams go play in London, I might as well enjoy it here. And so I'm totally down with 8:30 a.m. kickoffs going forward. And I assume, knowing the NFL, any way to make money, they'll keep doing it.
Yeah, no doubt. It certainly is a kind of an untapped market. And we know the NFL doesn't leave any of those kind of untapped, if you will. So I anticipate this will continue moving forward. And who knows, maybe we'll actually get some winning football teams that will make the trek over to London one of these days, because it's been nothing but just kind of subpar stuff going on in terms of the level of competition. And the football junkies we are, we still find a way to enjoy it.
Oh yeah, and by football junkies, I think you mean, you know, football nut jobs that we continue to enjoy this time. It's funny because the Lions and Chiefs are going there this week, which at the time they made the schedule probably seemed like a good game. You have the Lions coming off a playoff appearance. You got the Chiefs, AFC West favorites, and obviously those two teams are both very bad. So I won't mind missing any of that this Sunday. One thing I noticed, Arthur, watching games on Sunday, and I actually did a pretty good job of not spending my entire Sunday watching games. I spent a lot of time with my family, just kind of relaxing, unplugging a little bit. But from watching EJ Manuel, and then I watched a lot of Giants Cowboys, so watching Matt Castle, and kind of perusing some of the other noon games, I couldn't help but think, if you're a Bears fan, and I think our colleague over at House Hall, Adam Hogue, tweeted something along these lines, you had to look at these games and look at these quarterbacks and think to yourselves, man, maybe it is pretty good that we have Jay Cutler here in Chicago. I mean, there is a serious quarterback shortage, and I guess I just haven't had a Sunday to sit down and watch football to see how bad some of these quarterbacks are.
Yeah, no doubt. I was kind of hard on the Bills at the time of the Matt Castle trade, only because of the experience that he brings to the table. I really felt that, you know, rolling with EJ Manuel was going to be a downgrade there, and I felt pretty good about it after watching EJ Manuel turn the ball over, I believe, on three consecutive possessions early in the game. But then, sure enough, not to be outdone, I think Matt Castle also turned the ball over, I think, on three straight possessions. I know he had three turnovers. So, yeah, there's not enough good starting quarterbacks to go around. And when you start getting into these injuries, whether it's Tony Romo or Tyrod Taylor, Ben Roethlisberger, look at what's going on with Pittsburgh. Obviously, they're onto their second backup after taking a couple games to realize Michael Vick doesn't have it anymore. But, yeah, it's kind of the, you know, the what's the saying? The devil, you know, is better sometimes than the one you don't. So not to call Jay Cutler a devil, I don't even know if I got that saying right, but yeah, the Bears could be doing a lot worse at the quarterback position. That's to be sure.
Oh no, you got that phrase right. I use it often in college when trying to decide who to date. Was your devil you know better than devil you don't. I forgot some of our particulars, of course, Arthur, because we're new at this here. Bears _ insiders, where you can follow all our Bears content on Twitter, along as Shy Football. He's at Arthur Arkish. I am at K Fishbane of ChicagoFootball.com. Subscribe on iTunes. We will have a guest later in the show, Matt Venzel of the Minneapolis Star Tribune, to preview Bears Vikings. But before we get to that, Arthur, we should recap what happened last week with Jeremiah Ratliff and his kind of volatile exit from Hallis Hall and then subsequent release. As of this taping, he has not been signed yet. We haven't really heard from his agent in terms of, you know, anything disputing what the reports have been out of Hallis Hall, which is, you know, from the Tribune, the Sun-Times, that Jeremiah Ratliff was not suitable, you know, did not come to work suitable to work. They sent him home. He was angry. He came back at least two times. They sent him home again. The next day he was cut and they signed Ziggy Hood. And Arthur, one of the things I just wrote about this week that you can read on Thursday in our insert in the Sun-Times, Daily Herald, Northwestern Herald, that is a tease. This is also another example that this is Ryan Pace's team. And I'm sure a high-profile situation like this involved John Fox as well. But this is a professional team that's not going to stand for some of this stuff. And when they're also rebuilding and you're 34 years old and you've been injury-plagued, you know, that even more reason for not to stand to it, because I think the last regime would have kept him here. And Ryan Pace had no problem severing ties and moving out. On, even though Ratliff was a guy they wanted to build this defensive line around.
Yeah, several great points there, Kevin. You know, credit Ryan Pace, 37 years old, but continues to show the courage and his convictions, and will make this move, even though it might rock the boat a little bit. I still believe Jeremiah Ratliff was very respected in that locker room, so I'm curious to get to Hallis Hall Wednesday and try and sort of, you know, kind of just gauge the reaction throughout that locker room, if we're able to get anything. But beyond that, the 34-year-old aspect, all the time missed over the past couple years. We kind of scratched our head when they called John Fox, that is, called Jeremiah Ratliff one of the core defenders this offseason, not because he's not so talented, but just because the availability and the age have been an issue. So, you know, two separate things there, but nonetheless, he is no longer in Chicago, and now the Bears must move forward. They've got a very, very thin defensive line, and it'll be very interesting to see if some guys that maybe people aren't too familiar with, whether it's Bruce Gaston or Mitch Unrein, you know, continue to make bigger contributions, and what that'll mean for the Bears throughout the final 10 games.
Yeah, I actually kind of forgot that Bruce Gaston, who is a Chicago native, was on the roster until I was looking at the depth chart today. I think you're going to get a healthier Will Sutton, which should help, and maybe we'll start to see some of those flashes from the preseason. But it's Eddie Goldman's time. You know, it's Eddie Goldman's time. It's more opportunities for Jarvis Jenkins. Ziggy Hood could end up being a nice pickup if he's healthy. I mean, this guy was a consistent contributor for the Steelers when they had some pretty good teams past few years. Obviously got the foot injury in September. So I'm kind of curious how this defensive line all shakes out. But it's as you mentioned, this is Ryan Pace's squad. This is all part of, you know, renewing it. And you and I talked about it. When the Bears play the Vikings on Sunday, they're going to have zero starting players from last year's starting defense, assuming Shea McClellan is still out with a knee injury and Lamar Houston doesn't miraculously become a starter. And Arthur, a lot of people kind of said that is expected. That's what you want after historically bad defenses. But still, I'm still surprised and kind of impressed that Ryan Pace has been able to make such turnover with this defense. And you're talking about longtime Bears and high-profile names that he's parted ways with to put this together. What's kind of your take on the fact that he's been able to turn this over so quickly?
Well, that's the key there, is the last point is how quickly it's occurred. I mean, it's easy to say the Bears, sinking to new lows over the past couple years defensively. Sure, you want to wipe the slate clean and start fresh, but the way it's happened this fast has been kind of remarkable. And in most cases, you haven't seen it necessarily backfire yet, if you will. I don't think really the Tim Jennings is of the world, or the Lance Briggses, are really out there doing a whole lot. Jared Allen had a productive few snaps there for Carolina the other night, but overall, I think his move to get younger is an encouraging sign. And I thought Ziggy Hood was interesting, not only because he's a Mizzou guy, and so am I, but a former first round pick, and that's been another trend Pace has really stuck to, I think, in his first year as a GM, is he's trying to capitalize off these high pedigree players from other stops that didn't work out for whatever reason. And you only get, you know, so many picks in each draft, so why not try and start with guys that a lot of other people thought highly of, and maybe it was a fit issue, maybe it was an injury issue, but you have a nice pedigree to begin with and see if you might be able to kind of revitalize or rejuvenate some of these guys.
And Arthur, what is the big prize for this brand new defensive line in their first game together without Jeremiah Ratliff? Well, they have to play Adrian Peterson, one of the best running backs. Well, you could say he is the best running back, you know, skill-wise in the entire game. I know that Vikings offensive line might not be a strength, but it's still going to be tough to bring down Adrian Peterson, of course, as it always is. And we are going to move on to talk about the Minnesota Vikings in our weekly Behind Enemy Lines segment. Behind Enemy Lines. And joining us to give a inside look into the Minnesota Vikings, this week's Bears opponent, as we do every week in Behind Enemy Lines, we are joined by Matt Wenzel of the Minneapolis Star Tribune. He covers the Vikings. You can follow him on Twitter at Matt Wenzel, V-E-N-S-E-L. Matt, we appreciate you joining us today.
Thanks for having me on.
All right, let's start with Teddy Bridgewater, Teddy Ballgame, as I like to call him, of course. And I think Teddy Bridgewater, at least from a national perspective, I'm going to go a little bit out of town here, seemed to be a big sexy pick as a guy to take that second-year jump. And one of the reasons a lot of people expected the Vikings to have a resurgent year, the numbers aren't gaudy, and he was obviously much better in the second half against Detroit. But how have you assessed his second year overall?
He's been pretty uneven, honestly. I mean, I think based on what he did in the final five games of the last season, I mean, completion percentage was over that. You know, I think the expectation is that it was going to carry over, and maybe that was a little bit unreasonable. But, so far through the year, he definitely has been uneven. And, you know, there's been a couple games there where they haven't asked him to do much because they've gotten leads and they were able to run the ball with Adrian Peterson. But I do think the game in Detroit was maybe his best game of the season. He also played pretty well in Denver, given the circumstances there. And, we're starting to see the Vikings, opening up the field, and throwing more downfield is something they didn't really do in the first 4 weeks of the season. And maybe the emergence of Stephon Diggs has something to do with that. But, but for the most part, Teddy is, it has been steady. And that's the biggest thing they like about him at this point. They have a good defense. A strong running game, although they've had some inconsistent results there too. But, the identity is pretty clear. They want to run the ball. They want to get after the quarterback on defense. And, they'd like to get to a game without having asked Teddy to do too much.
Matt, as far as Bridgewater is concerned, just sticking on that topic, how much do you think, and we're not Bridgewater apologists here by any means, I'm just curious, I know the offensive line has had a lot of turnover, obviously, from my vantage point, that's been a part of Peterson's kind of, I don't want to say struggles, but a lot of the, not very productive runs over the past 2 weeks. How much of it is on the O-line? It looked like one of Bridgewater's strengths late last year was his pocket poise. At times this year, it seems like maybe he's feeling a little bit of that pressure.
Yeah, I mean, I think offensive line is a big deal when it comes to both of the things you mentioned. And, Adrian having a bunch of, runs that didn't really go anywhere, and the passing offense kind of getting off to a slow start as well. And, they went into training camp, This is probably their biggest area of need coming into the year, and they didn't draft anyone until the third day of the draft. So they decided to get better, where they thought they would get better just with the guys they have. And then, they lost John Sullivan and Phil Loadholt to season-ending injuries, and that certainly didn't help things either. But, the offensive line continues to be a problem. So often these runs, Adrian's in the backfield, and, part of it's on him now because it looks like he's pressing to do too much when he gets bottled up, or maybe he can get a couple yards if he's trying to break a big one. And it's also affected Bridgewater as well. And, he does a pretty good job with the pocket presence, as you said, at winning sacks. But there are times, I saw a couple times on third down where he just held on to the ball instead of getting rid of it. So, yeah, I think that's a factor. But also, too, the weapons there in the passing game have been kind of lackluster. And Mike Wallace has been so-so since getting here. But, that's why I think the emergence of Stephon Diggs is, so big for them to get someone who can get open and kind of have some chemistry with Teddy Bridgewater.
Matt, the Vikings have not had a lot of success at Soldier Field in the past few seasons, but Adrian Peterson has. Now, granted, AP kind of has success against everyone. Seems like, as Arthur kind of alluded to, and you've talked about this offensive line, a bit of an up-and-down year. What's your sense about who AP is now as a player after what happened last year? I mean, a couple of those runs in Detroit were vintage AP, but is he still able to do that, and carrying the ball 25 times, and does he have those 150, 200-yard games in him still at this point in his career?
Well, so far, I don't know if he's the guy he was in his prime because he is 30 now and he has the rust and he's had some injuries in recent years. But, he still looks really good. And, we've seen him have, a couple big games now. And, even in games like the Denver game and last week against the Lions where he didn't really have much going, then all of a sudden he was able to break free for a big run. And he still has that threat. And, it's still a lot of fun to watch him carry the ball when he just kind of bowls over people, does his jump cuts. I mean, he really is still a special player. Now, I don't know if he's, the same guy he was in his prime. That being said, I still think it's early to say because they are giving him a large workload, but I'll be really curious to see how he's running and if he's still running, late in the season, because at the pace they're on now, he's going to be getting around right around 300 or so carries, and it'll be curious to see if he can hold up because, as I said, throwing out last season, the previous three seasons, he had to get off-season surgery after those, everyone knows about the big knee one, but he also had to get a, groin hernia surgery too. So right now he looks good, but I'll be curious to see if he can hold up throughout the season, as you kind of alluded to.
Matt, I know we want to talk about the defense too, one of the best in football. I just have one more question. It just kind of popped into my head as you were talking about Mike Wallace being a bit lackluster and obviously Stephon Diggs' emergence. Everyone was saying the right things. Wallace was being a team guy, certainly in the offseason when he arrived. Is there any concern, though, how he may respond to maybe not being the guy all of a sudden with Diggs bursting onto the scene?
I don't think so at this point. I mean, yeah, you have to worry once things go bad, but, things are going well. They're 4-2, and, he maintains that winning is all he cares about. And, I think it's harder for him when he doesn't get the ball and they're losing. I think that at that point, as we kind of saw in Miami, that's when he started to kind of, point fingers and say, why am I not getting the ball? And, he has been, offered high praise for Diggs. Even it was funny last week, he was talking about how he's the number one guy, and he stopped, and he goes, well, I guess I'm the number two right now. So I don't think there's jealousy of play or anything like that with Diggs. So I think if they continue to play well and they're winning, it should be smooth sailing, although I guess you never know. But yeah, I think if it got to the point where they started to lose and he wasn't involved, maybe that changes. But, he knows this is a big season for him, and he's, supposed to make – double digits, 12, 13 million next year, and the Vikings can cut him at no cost. So he knows this is kind of a make or break year for him in terms of getting that next contract and sticking around. But, I just don't know if he's a great fit. I mean, just because how little they throw the ball downfield. And I know we saw in Miami that he can do some other things on screenplays and in the short passing game, but, his bread and butter is getting deep, and this is an offense that just doesn't throw deep very often.
We're joined by Matt Venzel, the Minneapolis Star Tribune, talking Bears-Vikings. And Matt, let's switch to the defensive side of the ball, kind of been the Vikings' bread and butter of late. Now, at Soldier Field last year, Jay Cutler really picked them apart. Mike Zimmer decided to go man up, Brandon Marshall and Alshon Jeffrey, Martellus Bennett, and that did not work well. When they played again in Minnesota, they had a much better game plan. The Bears had their worst offensive day of a pretty bad season. How do you see them deciding to match up with the Bears this week? I mean, it's a different Bears offense, of course, but considering what you've seen from them and what's worked for that defense in terms of how they're going to compete with Jeffrey and Bennett and Forte and Cutler.
Yeah, I mean, you know, things have obviously changed on both sides here. I know last year the Bears had success because the Vikings had Josh Robinson, who's, you know, 5'9", 5'10", is one of their outside cornerbacks in the nickel. And, you know, they just went after him all game, the Bears did. And so he is, you know, he's their fifth corner now. So they brought in Terrence Newman. And, you know, Munderlin is still on the shorter side too. But the fact that they were able to kind of get the size out of them, and as you guys know, the Bears, they lost Brandon Marshall, so they only have one of those big, tall targets to worry about. So, you know, I would suspect we would see Xavier Rhodes falling around just like he did last year in that final game, and, you know, also like he's been doing, you know, with Calvin Johnson these two matchups this year. So, you know, I think you could expect to see Rhodes on him a lot. But, yeah, I mean, I think they do have to worry about Bennett. I mean, they have a couple of really talented, versatile, athletic linebackers in Anthony Barr and Eric Kendricks. And I think they're going to be good in coverage someday. But right now they are not good. You know, they're still kind of learning how to make that happen in the NFL game. I mean, it seems like Barr, for a guy who's 6'5", he's always in position, but it seems like he's always a half step slow. So, you know, I think that'll be a matchup that the Bears might be able to exploit, whether it's, you know, a linebacker or a safety, you know, because the Vikings will change up what they do. But you know, I think Bennett could be a real X factor in this game.
Matt, interesting. Good segue there. I wanted to ask you about Eric Kendricks and some of the issues he's having, although I think overall he's played fairly well in what a couple starts since Gerald Hodges has been shipped away. He's been more of a kind of a force against the run and getting in the backfield on blitzes a little bit more. And then if you could just quickly break down the other two rookies we haven't heard quite as much about in Trey Waynes and Hunter, who I know did have a nice game when Griffin was ill last week.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a fair assessment, you know, Kendricks. I think, if anything, maybe he's been a little bit better than suspected against the run, just because he's on the smaller side. You know, he's only 6'4", 230 pounds. I mean, he's the all-time leading tackler in UCLA history, but I think there was, you know, some question about how he's going to handle playing against bigger players and being able to get off blocks. But he's been all over the place against the run. He's been great as a blitzer. But, yeah, in pass coverage, it's, you know, kind of been a mixed bag. And as for the other two guys, Trey Waynes, you know, I think people are kind of alarmed here because the top pick isn't really playing. But, you know, they brought in Terrence Newman, who's a guy who's been with Zimmer for a long time, and there's, you know, obviously a comfort level there. So Waynes really hasn't played all that much. I know against the Chiefs 2 weeks ago, him and Newman were alternating series for a while in the middle of the game. But, you know, he's really not going to have a much of a role. I think he will at some point by the end of the year. Someone will get hurt or eventually they'll, you know, elevate him. But right now, I wouldn't expect him to do much more than special teams on Sunday. And then Hunter is an interesting player. He's one of the youngest players in the league and great athlete. You know, he didn't have high sack totals at LSU, but he was very good against the run. And, you know, when Everson Griffin got sick against the Chiefs and didn't play, he was a guy who got the start and played pretty well. But, you know, he's in their rotation. They have two recent third-round picks, him and Scott Crichton, that'll be the backups to Everson Griffin and Brian Robinson. But, you know, as long as those guys are healthy, they're going to be playing probably at least 80% of the snaps, and that's not going to leave much for Hunter and Crichton.
Man, we'll wrap up with this. Just kind of, I'm curious your overall assessment looking into this game. If you have a prediction, feel free, but I don't want to have to put you on the spot. It is early in the week. But, you know, if the Vikings are going to be a wild card team, I know it's a road game, it's a division game, but these are games that they have to win if they want to be serious about the playoffs against the Bears team. It's kind of rebuilding, it's 2-4. How do you see this game shaking out? What's kind of something you're going to be honed in on Sunday to see who wins a certain matchup?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fair to say that this is the kind of game they need to win. And, you know, they're in the softer spot of their schedule. I mean, they played the Lions, they played the Chiefs, they got the Raiders coming up, and then it gets tougher. So, yeah, these are the kind of games that they need to win. And, you know, it's been a long time since they won at Soldier Field. It was 2007. But, you know, also, I mean, this win against the Lions last week was their first win against an NFC North team on the road in 3 years. So, no, I think they kind of showed something, and I do think there's something, you know, psychologically significant about them showing that they could beat, you know, a rival on the road like that. That's going to kind of bode well going forward. But, you know, I think with the way the Bears are playing offensively, I think they'll make it interesting for a while. I wouldn't be surprised if this game was, you know, one score game, you know, in the fourth quarter. But, you know, I think the Vikings, they're on a roll right now. They're relatively healthy, although, you know, being without Sharif Floyd is going to hurt them. But, you know, I think they'll make enough plays defensively, you know, late in the game to maybe pull away. And, you know, we'll see though. It's been tough to pick their games this year. You know, we saw them go into San Francisco that first week and get crushed. So it's kind of a mixed bag for them. But yeah, I mean, if they want to be a playoff team, this is the kind of game they need to win. And I think they'll find a way to do it.
All righty, Matt, we really appreciate the Vikings insight. We'll see you on Sunday at Soldier Field.
Hi, right, thanks guys.
That was Matt Venzel of the Minneapolis Star Tribune. You can follow him on Twitter at Matt Venzel, V-E-N-S-E-L, if you're trying to get some Vikings scouting report stuff during the week. And Yeah, great stuff there. And I think the interesting thing about the Vikings, before we get into our matchups, is I feel like the Vikings are well on their way to being the team that a lot of GMs want to be. It's homegrown. You know, you look at the way that they've drafted these players, Kendricks, you know, the kind of the more recent guy, Anthony Barr, Harrison Smith, a guy I love watching that guy play at safety for them, the corners, and then Teddy Bridgewater's their guy, Adrian Peterson, obviously been there forever. You know, they seem to have the right head coach and staff. So when Ryan Pace is trying to figure out what's next for the Bears, I mean, the Vikings are a bit of a team that's kind of found a way to make it work. And if they can make the playoffs, it's really sends this to fruition. I mean, you cover the NFC North for yesterday, so you know this team pretty well. But the way they've built this, you got to be, if you're a Vikings fan, you got to be pleased about where they are right now.
Absolutely. I mean, I've said it since the offseason. I think in terms of talent defensively, you know, there's very few, maybe two or three teams in the league with a better young nucleus, if even that. So, and you mentioned some of the homegrown talent. You could add Xavier Rhodes and Sharif Floyd, obviously, into that as well. Everson Griffin. So, yeah, they're just loaded. And Rick Spielman has an interesting approach. You know, he likes to trade back into the first round frequently. I think he's had multiple first round picks, three out of the past 4 years, something like that. And it actually affords him some misses because we don't talk as much about the Cordarrelle Pattersons and going back a couple years, the Christian Ponders. He's had a couple opportunities to get both his quarterback and his head coaching decision right. So very nice job by Rick Spielman, really good roster. And, you know, Teddy Bridgewater, I know Matt said has been uneven, but I still think given the quarterback ineptitude that they've been through there over the past couple decades, they have to feel pretty darn good where things stand with Bridgewater in year two.
Yeah, and they keep finding themselves these very likable head coaches with Chicago ties. First it was Leslie Frazier,
right,
and now it's Mike Zimmer. So let's get down to the matchup breakdown here. You know, I wrote this for our insert, which, again, you can see in the Sun-Times, Daily Herald, and Northwest Herald on Thursday. Bears run offense versus Vikings run defense. Arthur, this was probably one of the tougher ones to diagnose just on paper because – the Bears haven't run the ball very well the past few weeks, and we kind of forget about it because they have two wins in that span, but they haven't got Matt Forte out and getting him in a rhythm. The Vikings' run defense could be very good, but they've been terrible in their two losses and then very good in their wins. So, I mean, I kind of lean towards the Bears because it is Matt Forte, you know they're going to try to run the ball. I mean, Adam Gase has made that very clear, but this is still going to be a tough go against that Vikings front seven.
Yeah, you did a great job of breaking it down in the insert, which I hope our listeners will go out and grab on Thursday. And the whole key there is on the road. The Vikings have struggled in two of three games. Of course, the season opener, Carlos Hyde ran all over them. And then in Denver, the Broncos got going a little bit. I think Ronnie Hillman had a huge gain. So they've had a little bit of trouble, you know, with containment on the edges. But overall, it's still a really stout group. And Linval Joseph in year two for them, the nose tackle, has been excellent. That's the kind of guy, the kind of guy the Bears hope they have, obviously, in Eddie Goldman. So, yeah, but I have no problem with giving the Bears a slight edge here just because of those deficiencies the Vikings have shown and the fact that Forte coming off the rest and Kyle Long talking about the need to kind of get things corrected along the offensive line. You have to feel that was going to be one of the key objectives during the bye week. It'll be fascinating to see if they were able to get some things accomplished on that front.
Yeah, and I think the next one, the Bears passing offense versus the Vikings pass defense, is kind of similar because I think what we've seen from Jay Cutler and what we've seen now getting Jeffrey Royal back, Bennett should be healthier. The Bears should be able to throw the ball against anybody and be productive. Now, how productive can they translate those into touchdowns? That's another question. And say this about the offensive line. They've done a pretty good job against very good pass rushing teams in keeping Cutler clean, and he's done a phenomenal job moving the pocket. Then you look at the Vikings, great pass rush. They knocked Stafford down 13 times last week and very physical corners. I thought Matt did a really nice job laying that out. They have Harrison Smith back there. So this is another kind of tricky one where I think the Bears are going to be able to gain some yards, but I believe I sent the edge to the Vikings just because that pass rush and what they have in the secondary, there's a lot of talent there.
Yeah, no doubt. You have to feel good about what Jay Cutler and Alshon Jeffrey got accomplished last week. Obviously, the Bears' passing offense took a big step, but I totally agree. Minnesota gets the edge here for a few reasons. Like you said, they've got those playmakers in the secondary. Xavier Rhodes is going to see plenty of Alshon Jeffrey, and he's done pretty darn good against some big, tall, lengthy receivers kind of in the same mold as him. And then Harrison Smith is such a threat, both patrolling center field, coming up as a blitzer, and that's what worries me a little bit about this. You saw Mike Zimmer really unleash the blitz, the double A gap stuff, Smith coming off the edge, and then of course I've really been impressed with what Charles Leno has done. We don't know who's going to start at left tackle this week, but Everson Griffin is the real deal. His speed, his power is really something to worry about, and you just have to wonder how this, if it does happen to be Hronis Grasu and Charles Leno, how they can kind of handle the pass rush that the Vikings are going to throw at them. So it should be a competitive matchup, but I think this is an area where Minnesota can get a bit of an edge.
I had a very astute fan in our live chat today, which you can see at chicagofootball.com, ask about those double A gap blitzes that the Vikings like to run.
And Zimmer loves them.
And how Grasu will handle those. That should be a tough thing for the rookie. Let's switch to the other side now. Vikings run game, Bears run defense. My favorite stat about the Bears run defense, Arthur, this year is they've only given up 2 20-yard runs, which isn't that impressive, but it ranks high in the league, and it's much different to what we saw last year. So they're limiting teams from big plays, which you really need to do against Adrian Peterson, because you don't want that guy getting out in the open field. But we talked about no Ratliff. I don't expect Shea McClellan to be out there, and say what you will about McClellan, but he knows his run fits. He knows where he's supposed to be. This is going to be a tough matchup, even though the Vikings run game has been inconsistent. How do you see it going?
Yeah, this worries me a little bit. There's, like you said, no grace period for some of these new defensive linemen who are going to have to contribute right away. It's just a numbers game for the Bears, and then you worry about Shea maybe still not getting back, and maybe that speaks to the kind of the situation the Bears have at linebacker, that we're really worried about Shea McClellan not getting back. But there's just not a lot of experience, whether it's Jonathan Anderson or Leroy Reynolds next to, and Christian Jones doesn't have a lot of experience either, obviously. So Peterson to me feels like he's ready to go off. I believe he had over 200 rushing yards the last time he played the Bears, so obviously completely different personnel on both sides, but I don't know, it just seems like Peterson's kind of ready to explode. I would have to think the Vikings would have an edge here as well.
And then we go to the last one, which was my favorite matchup, because it's I think both teams' weakest points, the Vikings passing offense against the Bears passing defense. And Matt did a great job kind of explaining what they've seen from Bridgewater. He's been fine. He's been good. He isn't losing games for them. He's not putting the team on his back and winning games. I think Stephon Diggs brings a great element to that team. And this is what I would be worried about, Arthur, if you're on the Bears, is that speed element. I mean, this is a Bears team that had not given up a play for more than 34 yards, and then they gave up 5 of those such plays against the Lions. And maybe the Vikings look on tape and see the Bears are inexperienced at safety, see there's not a lot of speed out there, and really try to attack downfield. And we're going to repeat this every week when we talk about the Bears pass rush. Somebody other than Pernell McPhee has got to step up. I don't even remember who I gave the win to. I think I went with the Vikings just because there's more questions on what the Bears can do to stop the Vikings pass game. We kind of saw what the Vikings could do through the air against the Lions.
Yeah, that's right. I think it's as much as anything, just kind of how the Vikings are coming off such a high in Bridgewater's first 300-yard passing game. The Bears obviously coming off quite a low with what happened in Detroit. And of course, there's been a bye week in there. But, getting Antoine Rollback is going to be huge. I like Harold Jones-Cordy a lot, but I just he was in some pretty unenviable situations there against Calvin Johnson. And while the Vikings don't have any Calvin Johnson, they do have one of the hottest receivers in the game right now, and Stephon Diggs, who has that quickness. Mike Wallace, maybe kind of a one-trick pony, but you watch what happened to guys like Kyle Fuller and others against some speed earlier in the season, and John Brown in Arizona and stuff like that, players like that, excuse me. So you have to wonder about that as well. And I just I was really intrigued by Matt saying that Norv Turner doesn't really push the ball downfield anymore. I feel like what's going on here? This is some kind of parallel universe, but I guess that speaks to Turner's ability to adapt. And even saying that, Bridgewater did do it a little bit more last week, and I'm sure after watching the Bears tape against Detroit, it'll be part of the game plan again. So this will be a fascinating matchup as well.
So just to recap, on paper, we gave the Bears the edge in their run game against the Vikings' run defense. That's about it, though. Special teams, the Bears' cover teams are playing better. We know what Cordarrelle Patterson's capable of. Arthur, the one interesting stat that I've thought about this game is red zone. Both teams are bad in the red zone in terms of getting touchdowns. However, the Vikings are very good in terms of red zone defense, and the Bears are not. So if this is a game that you think – because I think the Bears' passing game, as we said, can move the football, and I think the Bears' defense is not good enough to stop the Vikings. You kind of got to give the ultimate edge to the Vikings because they're going to be able to score more points. Also, very good on third down on both sides of the ball for Minnesota.
Yeah, and we know how important, you know, situational football is. Obviously, it often separates the contenders from the pretenders. The Vikings certainly think that they are in the former category. I think we all know the Bears aren't there yet. So, yeah, really good point by you. And, you know, it's curious why the Vikings haven't been able to punch it in from close confines either, because you have Adrian Peterson, you have Kyle Rudolph. So much like the Bears, they have really good personnel to where you think they'd be better in the red zone. You wonder if that's getting ready to tip a little bit. And maybe it does for the Bears, too. Alshon Jeffrey's going to be healthy. Year they showed a little bit there before the bye, so it's another area that certainly will be closely monitored Sunday.
Now, John Fox, very good after a bye, you know, I think that the coaching staff, the extra time to prepare with this coaching staff. Here's what we can agree on, Arthur: this game will go better than the last time the Bears had a game after the bye.
Yeah, that's so we have that to hang our hats on, which is nice. Of course, that would have been the Lambeau Field massacre last year Kevin is referring to, and it's safe to say the Bears are going to be better prepared. You just have to wonder if at the end of the day talent is still going to prevail even at home. It does seem like, as Matt said, there's something to the psyche of the Vikings getting that first road divisional win in 3 years. It's hard to believe, but they've got a little bit of momentum going, and as good as Fox has been off the bye, I tend to go with a younger, more dangerous and talented team in this one.
Ooh, I'm going to go on the Wayback Machine, Arthur. I'm going to call it Throwback Tuesday or Throwback Thursday if you're listening on Thursday. Bears-Packers last year, Mark Trestman's talking about that practice, how they practice so well. And I said, well, Mark, how come your practice is not really translating to the games? And I remember he said to me, he goes, it's confounding. And pretty much he had no answer for why they were practicing so well, so, you know, so he claimed, and playing terribly. And I just remember that Packers locker room was just a nightmare being in there at Lambeau Field after that game. That everyone was just stunned and miserable and sad. And we found out later that they were close to making a move that night. Wow. I think suffice to say with the staff, we don't have to worry about things like that this year, even if the Bears lack some talent.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I think confounding is a good word Mark chose there for much of the Trestman tenure. So, no, absolutely, they're going to be better prepared, and you know, that will make it interesting. If nothing else, it's going to be competitive, and you know, the Bears fans will be excited to get back to Soldier Field and see their team. But again, I just come back to the more talented team, and even in a close game, it's why I tend to side with Minnesota in this one. I'm curious to hear what you think on that.
All right, well, let's head to our player to watch in the game, and then we'll go to our picks.
Oh, I'm jumping the gun. My bad.
No, you're fine. You're fine. You're doing great, Arthur. Keep it up. and then we'll wrap things up and kind of put our focus on this game against the Vikings. Who's your kind of one Bears player that you're going to be focused on Sunday?
Yeah, you mentioned him a little bit earlier in the show, and you know, before we can talk about Ziggy Hood and Bruce Gasson and Mitch Unrein, I think it's Will Sutton's time right now. He was getting some looks on the nose. Obviously, Goldman plays there too, but he should be healthier coming off the elbow injury. So whether he's at the five technique, whether he's at the nose, I think there's an opportunity against the Vikings offensive line for Sutton to show a little bit of that pass rush we haven't seen much of yet. And like you said, we're going to have to see it from someone other than Pernell McPhee if the Bears are going to have a chance, not only Sunday, but just moving forward.
So I wanted to make my player to watch Antrell roll, but we don't know exactly if he'll play. So I want to be careful there. So I'll go to the offensive side of the ball, and I'll say Martellus Bennett. It was a little hard on Marty. He leads the team in catches and receiving yards, but I think he would probably be the first to admit he can do more for this team. He's had a couple bad drops. His catch percentage is not as good as it should be. You heard Matt Venzel tell us that the Vikings are don't have the greatest personnel in terms of covering tight ends, unless they're going to take a guy away from rushing the passer, covering the run. I think getting this full time to heal, even though you know he's going to get banged up because he's Martellus Bennett, I think this could be an opportunity for him to maybe have a big game. But keep an eye on that defensive backfield, Arthur. Before we get to our picks, here's my favorite stat about the Bears right now. They don't have a single interception from their secondary so far. And the only other team in the league that has that is the Jaguars. And when I was watching the Jaguars-Bills game, I was hoping a corner or safety would pick off a pass. And they had two interceptions, but they were both by linebackers, Telvin Smith and Paul Posluszny. So they're still in the same category. But somebody in that secondary has to make a play at some point, going on moving forward.
No doubt. I mean, obviously this game is, getting takeaways and protecting the football is such a huge part of it, but particularly Vic Fangio defenses. I believe that over his 4 years in San Francisco, they ranked in the top three, if not the top three, the top five in takeaways over that span. So we absolutely need to see more of it. Maybe it's the return of Antrell Roll. Maybe it's Kyle Fuller waking up from his almost season-long slumber, or Tracy Porter, who's been close a lot of times but hasn't quite been there. So, yep, that's definitely a stat that needs to turn around fast. And Teddy Bridgewater has a turnover in, I believe, 5 of 6 games this year. So maybe this is the week that occurs.
We shall see. Before we head to our picks, Arthur, just in case you guys need something to talk about on your fantasy podcast this week, which you can obviously find right here in the Chicago Football Podcast, I won my week. I beat my roommate by 0.4 points because Chandler Cannizzaro missed that extra point last night. And that
no kidding.
Gave me the victory. He was pretty angry this morning when he fully realized what happened. But I just wanted to share that. I know nobody cares about anybody else's fantasy team, but I think that's a unique way to win a rivalry matchup.
You have made me very angry.
It's pretty amazing. I wonder if there's more instances of that with the extra point being moved back. If there's other similar stories, there's such narrow victories or defeats because of that. And because no one cares about our specific fantasy football team, let's just add that the Cardinals got away with a pretty shaky special teams performance last Monday night to beat the Ravens. So while they appear to be firing on all cylinders offensively and defensively, they've got some. Bruce Arians has some things to shore up in the third phase if they're really a legitimate Super Bowl contender.
And Bruce Arians has some things to shore up, and not throwing the ball on second down when you're running out the clock with 2 minutes to go, and then your quarterback throws the ball to nobody. I'm sorry, we are digressing. Let's go to our picks. Let's head to our studio, guys. Let's start with executive producer Dan. Matt, what's your pick for Bears-Vikings?
Guys, I got Vikings going 31 over Bears 24.
Okay, and next to you is Nick the intern. Nick, your debut prediction for Bears-Vikings.
I'm going to go with the Vikings, but as a score, I don't do scores. That's impossible to pick scores, in my opinion. So I'm just going to go with the Vikings straight up. I really think the offense is going to beat the Bears' defense.
Okay, Nick the intern doesn't believe in scores, which is fine. He's right, except for the fact, Nick, I hit the score on the dot in week one, just so you know. But I haven't done it since and probably won't do it again. Arthur, what's your pick for Bears-Vikings?
Yeah, I like Minnesota. I shouldn't say I like. I think Minnesota is going to win this game. I do think it'll be a little more low scoring. I'm going to say 23 Vikings, 20 Bears. I think Adrian Peterson goes off like he often does in Chicago.
For those of you who are listening to this podcast only for Hub's pick, I can tell you his pick. It is 27-19 Vikings is Hub's pick for this game. He wasn't able to join the show, but he'll be back next week. I'm the lone wolf in terms of our Chicago football writers. I did pick Bears 20, Vikings 19. I think there's going to be a lot of field goals in this game. I just have a weird feeling about this one, Arthur. I don't know what it was this week, but I'm putting my faith in the Gase Fox, Fangio, triumvirate coming off a bye. And you look at the rest of the Bears' schedule coming up at San Diego, at St. Louis, home versus Denver, at Green Bay. If they want to be in this, they got to win this home division game. And I think that might be a bit of a subliminal way, in their mind. But of course, these are picks that are surely not to be correct, but we like to have fun with them. And that'll do it for this week's edition of ChicagoFootball.com's Bears podcast. Want to remind you, for all the best Bears news and analysis, you can visit us at chicagofootball.com. And go ahead, head over to iTunes and subscribe so you will never miss an episode. We want to thank our sponsor, your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. Like the most dependable and longest-lasting trucks on the road, Chevy Truck Month rolls on. Check out all the Chevy truck selections at ChevyDriveChicago.com today and drive what the Hall of Famer Dan Hampton drives. A big thanks to our guest on the show today, Matt Venzel of the Minneapolis Star Tribune, our executive producer Dan Mott, associate producers John Solly and Nick the intern, and of course, my co-host, my partner in crime, Arthur Arkers. I am Kevin Fishman. For all of us here at ChicagoFootball.com, enjoy Bears Vikings. We will talk to you next week.